Welcome to another edition of the Big Pod Machine. My name's Gordon Whitmire. That's my partner, Pat Brennan. And behind the scenes is Phil Didion, the greatest producer of podcasts in the history of the world.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah. And I was going to call our podcast, as I usually do, the greatest podcast in the history of the world. Except, Pat, after the last podcast and what transpired since, I'm not sure we can claim that high stature anymore, especially when we're trying to line up playoff rotations last week. What the hell were we thinking?
I think that was mostly you actually talking playoffs.
I'm not sure, Mr. Riverboy.
Playoff rotations, can't recall, just can't.
And you'll recall when you're taking that dive into the Ohio River, you'll recall.
Who's to say? By the way, I want to really formalize the procedure there. I want you and I to get a picture I'm going to go to the fire department next week and make sure it's okay just to jump in, because I don't want people calling, you know. Maybe we schedule it with the fire department. Maybe they want to come and watch. Maybe they're big fans.
Wait, you think you're going to get arrested?
I assume they are. No, but people, you know, I would imagine it's, you know, if you see someone in the river, I would imagine someone's going to assume you're in duress and under duress.
If you're in the media like we are, they'll just let us float down the river.
Yeah, and that would be fine, actually, if they let me float. I'd be just as well off. But I want to make sure that, and it's not like I'm going to be swimming out to the river, like the middle of the river in the shipping lane, where I could get plowed under by a giant freaking barge carrying coal or something. But I just want to make sure we don't cause a civil disturbance, you know? Could you imagine if Burl gets a call, like in the middle of a day, and he has to step out of a big meeting? Oh, yeah. Gordon Whitmire. Yeah, listen, Burl, the Reds made the playoffs. Gordon Whitmire just floated, you know, 2,000 yards down the Ohio River, and the water rescue team from Newport, Kentucky is currently fishing him out. That could go bad. That could go sideways on us real fast. You and I could be out on the street looking for work.
I think the greater possibility of civil disturbance here is when either one of us takes our shirt off to jump.
Yeah,
in.
No, that's for sure. No one. I mean, Phil can blur that out. You know, we can censor certain things for recording purposes. But yeah. I mean, in real time, people who are there will obviously be rightfully offended by us half naked. but seriously, it's not a word people usually associate with us. How fast things can change, though, Gordon. Seriously, we were looking at the Reds as a real threat.
Yeah,
in the National
League. Well, they were
a week ago.
A week ago, they were a half game out of playoff position and controlled their own destiny because the team they're chasing is on this homestand.
Yeah. And, I mean, weren't there a couple nights where if the Mets had lost, the Reds could have pulled into a tie?
Well, when they had the off day between Anaheim and Arizona, they actually lost the last night in Anaheim. That would have done it.
Yes,
because,
right.
Because, and then the Mets lost the next night, and that made it a half game night that the Reds didn't play.
So
then they lost the first two in Arizona. Otherwise, they could have at least caught them. And by the way, before we go any further, anybody who's just listening for the first time on this, Pat and I have a running bet that if the Reds make the playoffs, I jump in the river. If they don't, he jumps in the river.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a very special podcast of Pat Brennan jumping in the river.
Boy, wow. I bet we get some people there that we're like really happy that are there. You know, I could see, I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but you know, our bosses, a couple friends from the Reds media department, I would imagine would want to see this, and maybe some other people too. So I think this is going to gain momentum. We just have to market it the right way, Gordon. You know,
I wonder if we can get like Redzilla involved. Maybe Redzilla can shoot you into the river.
Yeah. Boy, that would take an awful lot of that gas that it blows off to shoot the. They'd need to. Yeah.
You could provide a lot of that gas.
I can provide the hot air. yeah, maybe the winner gets a stroll down to the launch pad in Redzilla. Who knows?
We got to get Mark Sheldon to drive it. Anybody that knows Mark knows.
Well, I think we're out of luck there. But you know, getting back to the Reds here and what's transpired over the last week, I'm tempted, Gordon, to say that as someone who has a little bit of a rooting interest in the Reds' success down the stretch here, look at what happened in the last week. Who knows what's going to happen over the next week, which is true, and the Reds will welcome in the Mets on this current homestand that begins this evening, as you said, for three games. As things stand today, those games will be very valuable. Reds are going to have to survive a couple series to get to that point. But, you know, so who knows where we are a week from now, let alone a month from now when the season finally ends.
Well,
so,
here's the other thing. You know, we're talking about them chasing the Mets, and I think they're four games out.
They picked up a half game
last
night. So
they're four games out. They got the Mets for three at the end of this current homestand. So if all else holds, they would have the opportunity to sweep and get within a game. Now it's a race again. But the other thing that's in play is, without it going extremely well between now and then, they got two teams behind them now that are closer to them. They got three teams behind them that are closer to them than they are to the Mets.
Yeah.
So if something goes the wrong way there, I mean, it might not even be just the Mets that they're chasing.
Yeah. Right? And if it gets to a point, look, I've been alive long enough that I've seen some insane things happen. Particularly with the Mets, frankly, down the stretch, late in baseball seasons. Truly nothing is outside of the realm of possibilities. I'm sure some things spring to mind for you in your history covering this sport.
Yeah, but here's the problem, Pat. Here's the problem. Like, I was in Seattle in 1995 when the Mariners stormed back, caught the Angels on the last weekend of the season, beat them in the one-game playoff. That team had Randy Johnson. That team had Ken Griffey Jr. That team had Edgar Martinez. I don't see the all-around firepower here. And I don't mean just hitters. I don't mean just middle-of-the-order hitters, because we know that hasn't been there all year. They didn't even get enough starting pitching on this road trip. For a couple of starts in a row that definitely hurt them. Now, even if they turn around and get the kind of starting pitching they've gotten all year, the bullpen took another hit. Graham Ashcraft's on the IL.
Not good.
And they didn't play well. By that, I mean there were a lot of sloppy games there. And this is not a team that puts together 5 or 10 clean games in a row.
Yeah.
That's been the problem, especially when you look at where they're positioned in the division. The Cubs are one of the best fielding teams in a game. The Brewers are one of the best fielding teams in the game. The Cardinals field the ball a hell of a lot better than the Reds do. Those are your three primary division opponents.
Yeah.
And there's an entire part of the game that you're not even close to competing in.
Yeah.
And it's the part of the game that doesn't slump. It's the part of the game that sort of helps provide a foundation of stability for any team that's got other things that can help them compete, like the Reds do, pitching. But sometimes the pitching shows up and some of the other stuff doesn't. So Now, to your point about this month to go and stranger things have happened, you're not wrong.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's completely optimistic. Yeah, that's...
Well, it certainly could, but I think this team that's two games over 500 as they go into this homestand, that's who they are.
I disagree with that. I completely disagree with that. This is the first time all year, Gordon. Now, come on, you know this, man. This is the first time all year that they've really been in a pronounced slump.
Well, it's the first time they got swept all year.
Yeah.
It's also the part of the schedule that got tougher. It's who they are. I mean, they got swept by the Dodgers, the defending champs, playing in L.A. at the end of a long road trip.
Yes.
And they had a chance. They had a chance to win at least one of those games. Arguably had a chance to win two of those games.
Yeah, I agree with that.
They got beat two in a row in a couple of games where the margin, I believe, in both, certainly in one, was unearned runs. And that was, and consequently, they come in with losses in six out of seven.
And that's the sharpest deviation toward losing that we've seen from them this year, because they've fluctuated between.
They've never lost more than four in a row.
Yeah. I think
that's where they are. No, they're three in a row right now.
Yeah. So I get, you know what? I guess you're right. On balance, you could say this is who they are. I just feel like, you know, and you wrote this in some of your stories while you were on the West Coast, and what a slog of a trip that was for everyone involved, including you. But it's been months since they were just two games over, yeah. I guess is my point. And I think that maybe they're going to run out of steam here, but I am more comfortable saying the Reds are like a 4 or 5 games over 500 kind of team. And that's not a big difference, but I don't think we certainly didn't see the best version of the Reds. I don't know if we'll see the best they're capable of by season's end, but I don't think we've heard the death rattle yet, Gordon. I feel like this team has one more push. I know they're out of time. There is no margin for error, but I feel like this team has one more good push left in it. I don't know what that ends up looking like.
Have you looked at the schedule?
I have, yes.
You know what their three series are after the Cardinals this weekend?
Blue Jays, Mets, Padres.
Padres, yeah.
It's not easy. I'll concede that. I just don't. This team has been nothing if not consistently. They've just been a one of these nuisance teams that can knock off, play up and knock off the Yankees 2 out of 3, knock off the Phillies 2 out of 3, almost take 2 out of 3 from the Phillies in Philly.
Yeah, and what's our reaction been to that when they do it? It's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Why do we say wow? If this is a playoff team, why do we say wow when they take 2 out of 3 at home against the Yankees, who, by the way, aren't the 27 Yankees, no matter what Aaron Judge is doing?
Well,
they're not even in first place.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they're in second.
I get it. This is a team that plays up, though. They didn't do that on this road trip, which is why it was kind of jarring to see that.
Well, they kind of play down, too.
Yeah.
If they come out and lose 2 out of 3 to the Cardinals, that's not out of character.
Yeah. So let's talk about what has gone wrong here over the 9 games. And you and I spoke after you and I last spoke.
Or over the 130 something, because it's a lot of it's the same.
Well,
stuff.
We had a decompression session yesterday for about an hour, and Ellie De La Cruz was one of the topics that we mentioned. And I think, the thing that has been interesting about Ellie's evolution this year is that he was one of the rare players, in my eyes, who could, single-handedly take over a baseball game. That's really hard to do for any one individual player.
It is. Especially a non-starting pitcher.
Exactly. But he always felt like some nights, and it wasn't every night, obviously, he could do that. We haven't really seen Ellie take over a game since the springtime. And what I think I saw the stat, he has one home run since June 24th. What do we think is up with Ellie, if anything? Well, or is this okay. just I know
so this is yes.
I know Terry Francona and this Reds regime is looking for a more controlled version of Ellie De La Cruz. We're not talking about the
one. Is this some kind of reference to Loser? Is that what this is?
And the shape of an L on a forehead. Smash Mouth. That was a Smash Mouth reference. But, you know, I know this Reds regime is looking for a more controlled aggression out of Ellie De La Cruz as opposed to kind of wild, willy-nilly, you know, running the bases and even on the fielding side. But it seems like we're not getting the explosiveness out of Ellie the plate, on the bases. What do you think about that?
Let me take a swing at this.
Okay.
Because I think it's multi-layers, and I think you just hit on one of the layers. So coming in with a new hitting coach and a new manager, they obviously, if you're coming into this team new, you go straight to Ellie De La Cruz, because the closer you can get to getting the ceiling out of that guy, the closer you're going to get to anything involving October. So he's been a focus. And you're right. One of the focuses has been, if we can incrementally have him identify better pitches to swing at as he goes forward, do damage, pick out pitches early in the count to do damage, and then sort of have a B swing later. And we've seen that play out, because I believe I don't know how much of a turn it took on this road trip, but for most of the season, he's had a higher batting average than we're used to seeing. And that's by design. And it's not just like hit collecting either. It's playing the game. It's situational hitting. So if there's a guy on base or you need a base runner and there's a couple strikes, you know, we're seeing him go the other way. We're seeing him be more of a contact guy rather than try to be a 100 mile an hour contact guy in a certain situation. So there is some design to it. So there's that. The other thing is, he's dealt with two different leg injuries this year, a hamstring and then a quad, and he hasn't missed a game. This guy insists on playing. He's been managing his health. We just saw him steal a base in L.A., I think, on the last game, and that was his first one in a while. He's still got 30-something steals. He's picking his spots more there. And then don't forget, this guy lost a family member. He lost his sister. It's a very close family. This happened May 31st, 1st of June.
Yeah.
And he insisted and continued to play every day. And part of that, I've talked to some people close to him, and part of that is the emotional side of it. He needs it. Him being able to focus at the field on work and playing is emotionally important to him right now with the stuff he and his family are going through. And we saw in June, his numbers took off. And then at some point in July, they started to come back down to earth again. But that was also the time when he started dealing with the quad too. So there's so many things going on here with him.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I think we're going to look back on this season and say, wow, he had a pretty damn good season. But to your point about being able to sort of take over a team for a period of time, there's a reason. There's many reasons that I just outlined that have sort of worked against that. And here's a big one that doesn't probably get enough attention. So this guy gets pitched as hard as anybody in the game for a good chunk of the season. And I don't know where the numbers stand right now, but for a very large part of the season, he was getting pitched, you know, by definition, tougher than anybody, more breaking pitches and things like that. And part of the reason when you're a star player, part of the reason why a guy like Ellie De La Cruz would get more of that than, say, even Aaron Judge or even Juan Soto, you know, even some of these other bigger high-priced names in the game, is because there's not as much in the lineup protecting him.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
And so we've seen his numbers go up a little bit when Austin Hayes is behind him raking, or when Miguel Andujar is hitting well, comes over in a trade and he's hot and he sits behind him for 10 days and rakes, and all of a sudden you get better pitches for Ellie De La Cruz. Did you see what Kyle Schwarber did last night?
I did. It's pretty hard to miss.
As we tape this, he hit 4 home runs last night. And this is a guy we talked about when he was in town a couple weeks
ago. 9 RBI. There's a full month in the year left. He's on 49 home runs and 119 RBI.
I believe he's got the Phillies record now, or he's closing in on it. Who's got the, has Howard got the record?
Ryan Howard had 58 in 2006.
He's got a shot.
He does. Yeah. He could, got a shot. Look, when Kyle Schwarber gets hot, it's, he crushes the ball consistently like few players in the history of the game have.
And if you've got, say, 2 outs and Ellie De La Cruz up with Schwarber behind him, the last thing in the world you want to do is face Schwarber with Ellie on base.
Yeah.
You're going to pitch to him.
Yeah. No, I get that. There's the premise of my proposition here to you about Ellie really isn't fair, is it? Because he can take over a game every now and then, or he had that in the past where he would get, when Ellie got hot, you know, I'm talking about when Schwarber gets hot, when Ellie got hot, he could do things in he never had the 4 home run game like Schwarber had, but he could take over a game in all of his various ways, getting on base, his speed kills, it was lethal, it still can be, and he has some pop. So
he's almost done the 4 homer thing. I think he had 2 homers, 2 doubles one time.
Yeah,
he had a cycle.
Yeah, yeah. But that's not a fair expectation of either of those guys. It's certainly not fair of Ellie. I think, with all due respect to the players in that clubhouse, it's not fair to Ellie in this, with the way this team is put together, or at least the way they're playing right now, because Ellie doesn't have the protection. And it's you know, people say football is the ultimate team game. Well, I cover football and baseball. I happen to think baseball is the ultimate team game, and it's not a game designed for one player to dominate all the time. So the premise of that is
it's a game designed for each player to take turns dominating.
Yes. Hand off the, you know, pass the baton on as the, I hate that cliche, but.
But this hitter gets hot for a week, or this hitter has 4 hits this day, and this other hitter has 3 walks and a hit the next day, and makes rallies happen.
I've just, you know, part of the reason I'm thinking about this, Gordon, is because I have seen Ellie has come in for some criticism on social media, not necessarily from the enlightened corners of social media, but I think people are asking the same question that I put to you. Where are the explosive plays on the base path defensively? And he makes, you know, I mean, he's leading the NL in errors. That's not new, but.
No, just, but there's been, you know, there were some costly ones here recently.
Yeah.
That make you wonder. It makes you wonder about fatigue this late in the season, playing every game. Not to mention some of the emotional stuff we talked about that he's had to endure.
Yeah. So can I ask you another
one? I give him a ton of credit, but
yeah.
I just...
Can I ask you another question?
Yeah.
You were in... I was back here, not really on the East Coast, but on the banks of the Ohio River, Gordon.
Yeah, you'll be off the bank here pretty soon. Yeah, go ahead.
You were on that entire West Coast roadie, like I had mentioned, earlier in this episode. It sounds like, you know, Terry Francona it sounds like the impression I get is that he doesn't, you know, give rousing rah-rah speeches in the clubhouse. And he really, I don't think, addresses the team unless he needs to.
There was a game they won, maybe on the last homestand or the road trip before that, where had they lost, it would have been a tough loss and a tough stretch.
And he would have.
And he said he would have talked to the team after that. To your point. Yeah.
And
he picks his spots judiciously. Yeah.
So, but it sounds like after the road trip finale, which was confirmed the sweep of the Reds by the Dodgers, it sounded like he may have addressed the team. And again, I suspect this was not a 10-minute or even a 5-minute, you know,
we waited a few minutes.
Yeah.
For his availability post game. So it was brief, but clearly he had taken the time to say something.
And what was your takeaway of what that message was?
Well, he told us, you know, and he volunteered it. He said, I told the guys, he was asked how you regroup from this. Because they're obviously, I mean, they went in lightning speed. They went from a half game out to four and a half games out. And at this time of the year, you got less than 30 games left. And the odds start stacking pretty high against you. So, you know, they're facing this long flight home and they're all demoralized. So he said, I talked and they played sloppy. So that sets this up. He said, I talked to the guys. I told them we can choose to have our best 5 weeks of our life, but we have to remember what we've talked about all year.
Yeah.
And we have to learn from this. So that's a reference to some of the sloppy play, some of the lack of focus, some of it youth. But not to the point where he's not making excuses for that. I mean, we heard excuses the last couple of years sometimes with some of these, especially young players. Well, that's just part of the growth process. Well, that, you know, when you hear Francona talk about this, he's talking about the growth process of this season. Like, you should be playing better now than you were in April or May. The stuff that we were talking about in April and May should be bearing fruit now, and it's not. Some of it's the same old shit, and some of it's mistakes in the field. Some of it's bad decisions. I mean, Austin Hayes is a veteran. He's airmailing back-to-back throws that he's rushing, and at least one was completely ill-advised in the first place.
Yeah,
costing runs. In huge, I mean, they led 1-0 middle of the game against the Dodgers in the finale, and quickly like that, they're down 4-1. Bloops and ground balls, but there was a ball, a ground ball single for a couple runs that McLain didn't knock down. He dove over the top of it. And then Noelvi Marte comes up with the first two guys on base. It's still a close game. This is the other night. They're struggling to score runs against the Dodgers. First two guys get on, and Noelvi Marte bunts.
And that was his call.
He bunted. Yeah. Put it in the air. Pitcher caught it. Everybody's caught off guard. Pitcher doubles off the guy on second. And just like that, rally over. Francona rightfully said after the game, young guy trying to do too much. I wanted to see him hit the ball off the scoreboard because he's one of the few guys in the lineup that has the kind of power. In fact, he's the guy that gave him the 1-0 lead in the last game of the series with an early home run. Yeah. So these are the kinds of things that in the moment, they're one small thing, but over the course of a game and a series and a week, and in this case, a month, they really cost you.
Can't disagree with any of that.
That's what this team is right now, Pat.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to argue with you, but it's hard to. Mostly because it's just hard to argue with you in any circumstance.
I really like to argue.
I know you do. Well, what do you think about this homestand? We got they start with three against the Cards, who are with a sweep. The Cardinals are back in the game. Even if the Cardinals take two out of three, all of a sudden you've got St. Louis breathing down your neck. It just then the Blue Jays after that, and then the Mets.
If there's nine series left this year, if you win them all, right?
You're 11 games, at least 11 games over.
One of them's a four-game series. So let's say you split that one, you win the rest. That puts you, what, 10 games over or something like that?
Maybe 12. But, more or less. More or less. Let's just say, let's say 10.
10, 11, whatever it is. maybe that gets it done. That gets it done. But the Mets, that's a lot. That's a hell of a lot to ask.
Yeah.
So does that mean, you're not going to win every series. So does that mean, if you sweep the Cardinals and lose a series to the Blue Jays, but then you got to beat the Mets.
Yeah.
I mean, you almost got to sweep the Mets.
Yeah. And that was the circumstance I think you didn't want with the Mets.
Yeah.
Put yourself in a position where you have a little wiggle room. Certainly you have to win the series. You can't let the lead grow, whatever it is. Yeah. But now it feels like.
I will say this, man from Philadelphia. I think we were both pretty surprised when the Mets swept the Phillies. I mean, that's part of what created this separation.
And I wonder Terry mentioned, and I think you wrote this, that he stayed up or he was watching the end of the Mets
on the
game.
On the off day, he watched the Mets lose.
So
it might be the last time they lost.
I thought, well, look, I imagine that's probably part of why this team looked so deflated on Wednesday. A series between the Phillies and Mets does not, at this point in the year, you're not expecting a sweep one way or the other.
And if you get a sweep, you're expecting the Phillies to sweep then.
Probably, yeah. And now, after that series, people can talk about, how the Mets have dominated the Phillies at Citi Field. It's in their heads. There's all these conspiracy theories about things happening at Citi Field now. A lot of gamesmanship in that series, I was told. But as someone covering the Reds, and this was strictly from a covering the Reds point of view, I was expecting the Reds to get at least some help from the Phillies over the course of that Mets series. And they got none.
Well, the other side of that coin is, and this is why I brought it up, maybe we're giving the Mets too much credit. I mean, if something, if stranger things have happened and the Reds have any sort of a run left in them, maybe the Mets are the reason why they have a shot. Because I don't think the Mets are a super team by any means.
No.
Look at their pitching.
The payroll indicates they're a super team, but they're not.
Their lineup. This says more about their lineup probably than anything.
Gordon, I've come on this podcast, and you've heard me say this. The Mets are just such an incredibly volatile team.
Yes.
Through their own self-inflicted stumbles, when that Mets-Phillies series started on Monday, the Mets were seven games out. Three nights later, they're four games out. And then you're thinking they could really make some hay here. Wow.
They were closer to the Phillies than the Reds were to them.
Yeah, but then they go and play the Marlins last night, and they give a game right back. So this Mets team is it's true. The last time I said it, probably at least 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it's true today. The Mets could miss the playoffs. The Mets could be the NL East champions in a month. I have no idea what
you know. What the Mets are? They're bipolar bears.
Ooh, careful, Gordon. Don't.
Oh, polar bear! Come on, give me polar bear.
I will give you that. I just want to be careful. This is an inclusive podcast. We don't want to offend anyone.
who am I offending? Maybe I'm offending the Mets. Who cares if you offend the Mets?
I'll give you polar bear. But yeah, I just don't. Volatile is the word. Who the heck knows what's going to happen with the Mets? I don't think they'll go in the. I was just looking at their game by game over the last 6 weeks. It's incredible the slump they went on. It's hard to imagine they go in the tank like they were in throughout August, but like the meat of August. But it could happen.
It could happen because their pitching could break down, or their pitching could not hold up.
And I get it. One day, Gordon, I am going to come in for abuse from being from Philadelphia. Like you get abused for living in Chicago, and I don't wish that on you. I'm not looking forward to the day.
I get these morons out there that accuse me of being a Cubs fan because I'm not from Chicago. I covered the Cubs for a bunch of years.
You have this base of knowledge. I have this base of knowledge. And it's so funny. I got to tell you, everyone, this is something I feel like I want to scream from the highest hill in Cincinnati to Cincinnatians sometimes. Everyone is from somewhere. And not everyone is from Cincinnati. So people come into this great city of Cincinnati and they have backgrounds in other areas.
And people that cover teams around the country aren't, in most cases, from there.
Yeah. So look, you actually do apply effectively and reasonably your knowledge of the Cubs. I think I like
and the Angels and the Mariners and the Twins, who I covered before.
So look, I just want to say neither of us harp on the Cubs, harp on the Phillies. If the Phillies were out of it right now, I wouldn't have mentioned their name 10 times in the last 10 minutes here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, these are the teams they have to beat. Otherwise, you don't hear us talking about the Kansas City Royals or the Pittsburgh Pirates or the, friggin' Rockies.
No. I just think, I'll put a bow on it. You expected the Phillies to give you some help this week if you're in Reds land. And when that went the total opposite direction, man, it really hurt the Reds. The Reds had a vested interest in the Phillies' success this past week. They didn't get any help. That doesn't mean they won't going forward, though, whether it's,
And at this point,
the Mets and – hey, listen, here's another thing. The Mets and Phillies still have – 4 games head-to-head in Philly. They're going to bash each other's brains in for 4 games. Probably, if I were a wagering man, I'd wager they split it. There's an opportunity to pick up some ground, There will be opportunities here. It just so happens that as you mentioned, the Reds are going to have teams that are whole handfuls to deal with on their side, too.
And not only that, but they've had opportunities all year that they've pissed away. Yep. And so here we are. 2 games over 500. I mean, before we can even talk about getting help, they need to help themselves. They got to win. They got to win these series. Do they have to win 10 games in a row? I don't think they have to win 10 games in a row.
No,
they
got
to win
so
series and maybe even a sweep here and there. It's you can't overstate how big the Mets series is to what's left on this schedule and how important it is that in this next series coming up, they take care of business and really – I say take care of business. This Cardinals team is not going to be a pushover.
This is their season.
Not necessarily worse than the Reds.
No,
they just are in the standings by a little bit.
They're probably looking at this Reds series a little bit like the Reds would look at the Mets series a week from now. This is an opportunity for the Cardinals to put themselves in position to leapfrog the Reds. And then they're back in the wild card race. And they're the ones talking about, will the Mets slip up enough and we can sneak in?
This is what I saw in Arizona, because the media there, and including their broadcasters, were talking openly about they think they're back in the wild card race. And here comes the Reds to town, the team closest to the playoff field that's not in it, a chance to get closer to leapfrogging somebody in front of them. What happens? They play their asses off and win two out of three.
That's how they should be looking at it. Absolutely.
The Giants just swept the Cubs, and they're back in it. So you got the Cardinals, the Giants, and the Diamondbacks that are all a couple of games, two and a half games back of the Reds. They all think they got a chance to, you know, leapfrog each other, as the case might be, and possibly the Reds. That's what they're playing for now. You're right. That's what the Cardinals see when they come into town. They see the Reds in front of them and a chance to catch them.
If they catch them,
then the Mets are in front. Then the playoffs are right in front of them.
And I would say I know this is like the immediate thing and the thing that will be most quickly dated as people watch this podcast over the next week or however many days, this Cardinals series, because it'll come and go the fastest. But, you know, that's my worry for the Cardinals series. The Reds do play up. They have a tendency. I don't know if, you know, microphone in some of these guys' faces and in Tito's face, I don't know if he would appreciate it being stated like this, but I think they do play down to teams. And if the Cardinals are going to play up, as I expect them to against the Reds, this feels like one of those series where the Reds should take two out of three. But, you know.
Well, the good thing is it's not the Pirates. Like, I don't think that seeing the St. Louis Cardinals in that birds on the bat jersey coming to town, I don't know how you can possibly think you're playing down there. I don't know how you can look down on a Cardinals.
And it's a divisional opponent. Reds. Yeah, maybe I'm completely off base here.
It's not just a divisional opponent. It's one with a legacy. It's one with a name, with a brand, and it, you know, they're not. Over the course of the season, they haven't played much worse than you.
Yeah.
I mean, you got, and I think, they got a winning record? I think they got a winning record against the Reds. 4-3, maybe? Or is it? I think maybe they're 4-3 against them.
They split the four-game series here. I don't know what they did. I forget what they did. Probably, yeah.
I think they lost the series there.
Yeah,
so
I think it's 4-3.
You got no right to be thinking, like, if you're the Reds.
Yeah, you're right.
You better be playing up against these guys. So,
yeah
it's just hopefully for their sakes and fans that are trying to invest in October baseball, that these guys feel like they come back home after a fire was lit under their ass, because it should have been.
Yeah.
If they play their best baseball, they got a chance to make noise down the stretch.
Yeah.
Even with their best baseball and even with noise, they're going to need a hell of a lot of help. So they still might not make it, but it's worth watching to see if they give themselves a chance. And that's worth watching for what it might say about next year.
Yeah. Now, my final thought for this episode, Gordon, a week ago, I was fraternizing with some peers. And I was told that, I don't know this to be a fact, but I heard that an email went out about Reds playoff tickets. And I don't know if it was an opportunity to put money down or just an announcement about what the protocol would be if and when they got there. But those are really fun emails to get. And it doesn't take a lot. Like, any team that is within the realm of possibility of being in playoff baseball, it behooves them to set all that stuff and put it in working order just for the logistical side. So maybe it's just covering bases there. But if you're a fan, those are the kind of emails you like waking up to. It's exciting. I don't know if they went out the last couple of years, probably did in 23, those emails, the communications from the club like that. But, you know, through all the hardship, they have still put themselves in position to be relevant on Labor Day. And I'll tell you, I got to say, I know it's it's crazy. It doesn't look like it's going to go their way as of today, but man, did things change fast in a few spots across baseball just over the last week. When you and I convene again in a week's time, maybe the conversation will be different. We'll be talking about how we'd set up the starters for the wild card series again. Who who the hell knows?
Next time we convene, it'll be on the eve of the Mets series. That'll be, well, you know, if we have something to talk about that makes that series especially relevant, then that'll be good news for the fans.
Yeah, good for everyone. Good for us, good for you.
All right, well, with that, I'm going to start doing some planning, scouting out a place where you're going to jump in the river. And now that it's football
season. Yeah, I am going to go to the fire department and ask them what, like, can I do this? Will I get swept up? I ought to contact.
You're just trying to get out of it. You don't want to go into a damn fire department.
Well, Gordon, I don't want to jump. I don't want to jump in and then get arrested or something.
That's nothing new.
I've been arrested on the job once. I don't need a second arrest. I don't think the Inquirer can help me out with that one if I get arrested for jumping in the river.
Like, what's the worst? A night in jail, maybe? Come on, man. For a good cause.
And maybe I lose my job.
My amusement.
I've suffered greatly for your amusement before, so.
That's a good note probably to end on right there. Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll be at you next week with another edition of the Big Pod Machine, hopefully with a lot of meaty stuff to talk about. Because, we're in the stretch run. Man, this is it. As a manager I covered once called it, this is nut-cutting time. I mean, this is we're down to it. So hopefully there's some really good stuff to talk about next week. Thanks again for listening. That for Gordon Whitmire, that's Pat Brennan there, and Phil Diddy on behind the scenes, our great producer. We'll talk to you next week.